Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, The Devil Made Me Do It, a conversation with Jeff Belanger. In the early 1980s, a young boy in Connecticut was seemingly put under the spell or control of an unseen force shortly after moving into a new family home. A power so strong that it took many months of blessings and exorcisms to try and rid the dark entity from the boy. During one of these exorcisms, feeling pity for the boy, Arnie Johnson stepped in and demanded the spirit take him rather than the boy. This would be the start of a second chapter to a story that would end in murder, and one claiming the devil made him do it. Today, Jeff Belanger discusses the events portrayed in The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It.
My first encounter with this story, I was probably 14 or 15 years old, and I heard Ed and Lorraine talk about it at a library program in Newtown, Connecticut, which is where this whole story began and the town I grew up in. So I attended, and this was a big case. They talked about it often.
And what was your I'm assuming this isn't like in the children's section of the library.
No, this is like it's October. So they do these, these speaking tours that they did every year. You know, around Christmas, you go to see the Rockettes. And in October, you go to see Ed and Lorraine Warren. That's that's how it is. And so, they would do these programs for teens. You know, I was an interested kid, so I went, but it was mainly adults in the room. And they would present evidence on all kinds of cases. They would play audio clips, and they would show video, and they would show still photographs, and they would just talk about these cases. I remember hearing the audio on this from the kid who was possessed in Brookfield. Brookfield's the next town to Newtown. It's they're touching towns. And it's chilling because, you know, we can all change our voices. We can mask it and make it sound funny. But when you hear this kid screaming, this guttural, demonic scream, I was chilled to the bone. I still am when I hear that clip.
Yeah, I heard it too. And I mean, I can imagine, you know, especially hearing it back then, you know, prior to all of the ghost stuff that, you know, you've experienced and have spoken about and have researched over the years, being a kid and hearing something like that. It is one of those things, even today when you hear it, it has a very chilling effect to it. Because, I mean, how does the human voice do such a thing?
Well, to make matters worse, I was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
So this was, the nuns talked about this stuff sometimes in CCD. You know, they would talk about how, you know, well, you can get possessed, and then there's exorcism and stuff like that. And we're all thinking about the movie Exorcist. And then you see your neighbors, Ed and Lorraine Warren, from Monroe, Connecticut. Monroe is the other town touching Newtown on the other side.
Yeah.
And so these, you know, here are these folks saying, oh, yeah, it's real. Here's proof of it. And you go, oh, my, you know, right where I'm living, it just becomes so very real. I think it's easy for us to think about demonic possession, for most people to think about it in the abstract, you know, oh, that movie, The Exorcist, or any other number of movies. But it's suddenly very real when it's being talked about in a library by people you know, and it's reinforcing stuff that your religious leaders have told you.
So you hear this audio and it's chilling, and that's where we'll kind of start. But take us back before, you know, before obviously any of this happened, before they recorded this audio, and let's go into their story and the story of the man involved in this case, the man who was tried way before the trial, way before any murder, way before anything happened. How did Ed and Lorraine interact with him? What was their relationship prior to everything? Take us to the beginning of everything.
Sure. So the very beginning would be July 1st, 1980. There's a 26-year-old woman named Debbie Glatzel, and she's living with her 7-year-old son in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And Bridgeport is maybe 25, 30 minutes away from Newtown. But Debbie's from Brookfield. And I'm not going to drop too many town names on you, I promise. There's just a few you have to remember, really. Sure. Newtown and Brookfield. So Bridgeport's a city, and it's a pretty rundown city around 1980. So she's there with her son, and her boyfriend is 18-year-old Arnie Johnson. And if you're doing some math in your head, the son is from a previous relationship. Mm-hmm. And Arnie Johnson is a tree surgeon and landscaper, and they're trying to start a life together. Debbie also has a roommate with 3 daughters of her own. And so the thought is, you know, this is not the best place to raise kids. What if we all rent a house, you know, pool our money and resources, rent a house big enough for all of us, and then we can, you know, make a better life for everybody. And they find that house in Newtown, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit run down. It needs a little TLC and work, but Arnie's ready to do it. And they move in July 1st, 1980. That's when they arrive at the house. The house has an attached apartment, which is where Debbie's roommate will live with her 3 daughters. And then there's the main house where Debbie and her son and Arnie will live. And the minute they move in, something feels weird. And the first to notice it is actually Debbie's mother. Debbie's mother and her 2 youngest brothers came to help with the move. And they're just a few miles away. Where this house is in Newtown is very close to the Brookfield line. So just a few miles separate the house Debbie grew up in and her parents and this house. And Debbie's mother notices something's weird about this house. She doesn't like it. She's uncomfortable. And it gets worse, of course, because the furniture from the previous tenant, some of the furniture's still there, and it should be gone by now. So that's frustrating, you know? And to make it really worse, the apartment that her roommate is supposed to move into is occupied by the landlord's daughter, and she has no intention of getting out. So this thing is a cluster right from the minute they get there, a logistic cluster. Forget about the paranormal right now, right? Yeah. It's just like, oh, come on, you know? This is not what we all agreed to. And so the thought is, all right, let's get in here. Let's clean up this place. Let's do what we can do and just assume everything's going to get worked out in a couple of days. And so that's what they do. And Debbie puts her brothers to work, and they start bringing in boxes.
And as they start to bring in the boxes, what continues to happen? Is it continue to go into this place and start to try and call it home?
Yeah, so they're cleaning up what they can, and Debbie's youngest brother is sent back to bring a box and to sweep up the master bedroom. And as he goes back, David, he's 11 years old, he goes back into the bedroom, sets the box down, and something pushes him down on the bed, some unseen force. And so he's a little freaked out and looking around, doesn't see anything at first, but then this old man materializes in the room. And now he's just completely freaked out. And the old man warns him to go home, take his crucifixes off the wall, take his Saint Michael's medals down and things like that, and take all that stuff down. And David's out. David's done at this point. Forget it, right? He goes out of the house and he sits under a tree in the front yard and says, this is it. Something's weird in there. I'll be out here. Mm-hmm. And again, everybody's busy with the move, so no one else quite seems to notice. But then his brothers go back to that bedroom to bring some more stuff, and the door slams on them, and they can't get out, and they're screaming and banging. And then finally the door opens again. And so everybody's a little bit uncomfortable. And this is all day one stuff, but everyone's figuring it's stressful. There's a move. And that night, Debbie and Arnie decide, you know, we can't stay here because there's still furniture and whatever. We'll just go back to the Glatzel's house in Brookfield. We'll stay there for the night and get this sorted out in the next day or two. Mm-hmm. And as they get back to the Brookfield, once David starts talking to his brothers about what he experienced and then realizes they too had something happen, David is the first to speak up to the adults and say, hey, there's this creepy old man there, and he's warning me about taking down our religious medals and our crucifixes and things like that. And I can see him right now. And David describes seeing the old ghostly man in the house in Newtown. Keep in mind, they are miles and miles away. There's no line of sight at all, right? I mean, yeah. But he sees it, and he said, he's coming here. He's coming toward us. And he sees this man getting closer and closer to their house in Brookfield. And pretty soon, David starts referring to this not as the old man, but as the beast. And it's pretty much that first night that the entity now seems to be attached to David, mm-hmm, in the house in Brookfield. And that's when things start to just get worse.
Well, how interesting that the beast, the old man, is being very polite about it. Of, you know, take those crosses down, take the medals down, you know, rather than just like flipping them in reverse on this wall or something like Amityville style. But he's actually just asking. I've not heard of that in a haunting case before, where something is dark and demonic, where there's kind of the candor, the consideration of suggestion.
Hey, do me a solid. Yeah. Take those down, would you? Like, that would be helpful.
Exactly.
No, I know. It's strange, and it's important to know too that the Glatzels are a devout Roman Catholic family. You know, they go to church, and they that's part of their life, which is no surprise. That area of Connecticut is hugely Roman Catholic. Sure. Most people are Roman Catholic in that area. And so again, the first night, people sort of chalk it up to kids overtired, overactive imagination, you know, whatever, no big deal.
Yeah.
So the next day, they go back to that house in Newtown, and they're trying to sort things out. And pretty soon, the former tenant comes to get the last of her stuff. And that's when Debbie presses her and says, hey, anything weird with this house? And finally, the woman says, well, you know, there's the old man's ghost in the back bedroom, but whatever. And then doesn't want to talk about it anymore, and she leaves. And so now they're unnerved. And Arnie goes down into the basement of this new townhouse, and he said there's a room that was built out of like plywood, just all on its own, and it's locked, and they have no way of getting in there. And it made him uncomfortable. He has no idea what's in there, but he's uncomfortable. And as he's walking out of the basement, something that he can't see taps him on the shoulder. And so now the stuff that David said and the brothers had said the night before, and what the former tenant said, and this tap on the shoulder, they're spooked. Yeah. They're a little bit spooked that maybe this isn't a good idea. And then to make matters worse, that woman, the daughter of the landlord, still refuses to move out of that apartment. And at this point, they want out of their lease, because they're saying, and well within their right, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, the deal was we get both places. We can't have this. Like, this isn't going to work at all. And so there's an argument with the landlady, and pretty soon the deal is the lease is going to get broken. They're going to live with the Glatzels for a little bit until they can find another option. Mm-hmm. But at this, it's kind of too late, because whatever was in the house in Newtown now seems to be completely focused on David, and it's getting worse.
So this thing, they're out of the lease. You'd think, oh, you're leaving the haunted house, game over, it's done.
Right.
But no, the transfer has already been done. The attachment has already taken place, seemingly for almost no reason at all, other than the fact that they were in that place at that time. It wasn't like he's sitting there trying to conjure something up. It just seems to go, hey, here's a vessel, let's jump onto this.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's there's no, and David's a good kid. He's not prone to lying. He's a good 11-year-old kid, and you know, good in school and all that other stuff. So this is not it's not something that is warranted.
Yeah.
Yet it just seemed to be an opportunity for whatever this entity may be. So now back in the house in Brookfield, which is pretty much where we're going to stay for going forward. The house in Brookfield, David seems to be sort of like perturbed and tormented by something he can't see. You know, and it's getting worse by the day. I mean, this all started on July 1st, and by July 3rd and the 4th, I mean, he's being, you know, seemingly hit and punched, and he's starting to act differently. He's starting to use words his mother described that were just not quite right, like for his vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough to explain that unless you're a parent.
Sure.
You know, and if you're a parent and you know the words your kid is used to using, if they start using, you know, 50-cent words, you start going, huh, where'd you hear that? And if they use another one and another one, it's just different. You just start to notice it. And that's what's happening with David. But once it gets to be physical attacks, they get nervous. And the first people they reach out to, the Glatzels, are their church. They reach out to their church, and they ask for the priest to come to the house and say a blessing. And they do. The priests come out, and they say a blessing. They do holy water. They bring some religious candles and things like that. And that seems to offer a little bit of peace, but for a very short period of time. I mean, in another day, it's starting up again. And David, and the attacks are getting worse. It's like they can see something hitting him and punching him and even choking him.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.